Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022. Our first item of business is to take the roll to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson.
Olson, present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson.
Richardson, present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative West. Representative West.
Present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. The next item of business is approval of the minutes from our March 17th meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the approval of the March 17th minute of Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there discussion to the Petersburg motion? Seeing none, I thought I heard something. There's no discussion, so we will take a voice vote on this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. So members, we have four bills on the agenda today. We're going to start off by continuing our hearing from last Thursday on House File 4164. That is Representative Elkins' bill that contains the recommendations of the independent expert review report that Mr. King and his team put together for us. And where we left off, we had heard public testimony from deputy registrars and AFSCME, and we still need to hear from our public sector partners. So we have Pong Zhang, the Director of Driver, Vehicle, and Services for the Department of Public Safety. And he'll be followed by Jenna Covey, the Chief Business Technology Officer at the Department of Natural Resources. So, Mr. Zhang, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Thank you for having me back. First, I'd like to thank Representative Elkins for taking the time to review and integrate the recommendations from the IER report. In general, DVS is open to the recommendations made here, and we'll continue to work with partners here and throughout the state to include our deputy registrar partners to ensure proposals can be administered and implemented. DVS is not opposed to removing the knowledge test requirement for out-of-state drivers. We're not opposed to a change in Section 22 to change the way online and mail-in transactions to a direct appropriation. And in fact, we believe that this would eliminate the deficit that we're experiencing now. And we certainly don't have concerns with deputies providing records. I will note that it is really important that we are able to implement a way to audit these transactions to ensure that compliance with federal and state regulations. DVS agrees that the safety of our employees are critical, and we are certainly able to complete the report as related to the need for security cameras. Just as an aside, DVS has also put together a proposal for security cameras through the governor's supplemental budget to place security cameras at all of our 5-day-a-week stations, and also to create a reimbursement process for deputy registrars to install cameras at their sites too. DVS doesn't have any concerns with increasing fees to the transactions, and we believe that DR's deputy registrar partners should be paid or should be compensated for the work that they perform. There is one proposal in here that DVS does have concern with, and that is the fee sharing requirement that is laid out in this proposal. These transactions are conducted entirely by state employees through state processes. And as proposed, we're looking at over $6.8 million from the vehicle services operating account annually appropriated for these types of transactions, and over $1.8 million from the DVS tech account, just totaling over $9 million annually. And we have concerns for both short-term and long-term feasibility and sustainability to this. The help of these accounts are critical as they resource the entire DVS system and the services we provide. And then just as a final thought, we recognize that this is a very large bill and with lots of changes, and we're very happy to work with the legislature and our partners throughout stakeholders throughout the state to ensure that we can administer these there. And we want to make sure that the effective dates allow us time to properly obtain input, work with our partners, and obviously roll out on time. And so with that, I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to share our thoughts on this. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Zhang. Are there questions of Mr. Zhang from the committee, Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, Mr. Zhang, if you said that you have concerns about the redistribution of some of the online fees, was that correct,
Mr. Zhang?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, that is correct. The fee sharing for any mail-in online transaction, especially with the increase in the number of transactions that we will see here, we are estimating that and in total of the transactions as we see them today is over $9 million annually. And we project that actually the growth of these types of transactions will actually increase into the future, and that is a cause for concern for us.
If I can follow, Mr. Chair.
Proceed, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess my inclination is that those that are doing things online and mail-in are doing the simple transactions. And so my question, Mr. Zhang, is do you think that the amount of work being done by these mail-in and online ones are in commensurate to the amount of work that the deputy registrars do in the office, which tends to be those that have questions, take longer to do, spend more time? Are you thinking that those are comparative and so fees need to stay with, or do you think there is need for extra compensation for the extra work that the deputy registrars are doing as compared to online where it just automatically gets done, or even if it's mail-in? It seems like there is a difference there.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Petersburg, certainly the transactions that are being conducted by deputy registrars are just in nature going to take a little bit more time. They're interacting with customers, and we recognize that the transactions that they perform, again, they should be compensated fairly for the work that they're conducting. In terms of my, it's my purview on whether these types of transactions take longer or shorter, we are using the MnDRI system to support these mail-in and online transactions. We're able to conduct them in using the system and in bulk. And so through the partnership with MnCorp and with DHS, we're able to conduct a lot of these transactions with certain speed. I think it's hard to compare those types of transactions against each other. We're open to the conversation around what we can do to work together going forward. I think with the sharing of this type of transaction is something that just causes concerns for us.
Thank you, Mr. Zhang. I would now like to, I don't see any additional member questions, so I'd now like to ask Jenna Covey from the DNR to provide testimony to the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jenna Covey, and I'm a Minnesota IT Services Chief Business Technology Officer, and I partner with the Department of Natural Resources. Thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. I'd like to start with a quick overview of the electronic licensing system known as ELS and a brief update on the status of our effort underway right now to modernize this system. Currently, the ELS is a vendor-supplied commercial off-the-shelf or COT system that processes hunt and fish-related transactions and recreational vehicle transactions. So that includes boat, snowmobile, ATV, off-highway vehicle, and off-road vehicles. And starting in summer of 2022, the ELS system will also support hunter safety volunteer management. The ELS project team has been following the modernization principles laid out in the Minnesota Blue Ribbon Commission on IT Modernization Playbook since the launch of phase one of the project, which is known as the select phase. And I'd like to thank the chair of the BRC, Mr. King, for his work on the playbook. It's really been instrumental in our approach to this effort. Engaging with stakeholders has been a critical component of the project to ensure that we're meeting the needs of all of our stakeholders, which are varied from hunters, anglers, fish and wildlife staff, enforcement officers, as well as deputy registrars and license agents. The results of these stakeholder engagement sessions have informed the requirements of our RFP. We've also been working closely with the Department of Public Safety to ensure that we're aligning on business processes so that common business practices, such as scanning of documents, can be done with existing equipment and conforming to existing process. We want to make it as easy as people, easy and streamlined for people as possible. The vision for ELS has been informed by our stakeholders, and it's to provide a modern, integrated system that will meet the needs of all Minnesotans. And I'd like to touch very briefly on the components of the requirements for the system. So the major component of the system will be the point of sale system, and this will be used by Minnesotans to buy hunting and fishing licenses and tags online. It will be used by DNR staff to track and fulfill license sales, and it will be used by our deputy registrar and license agent partners to provide recreational vehicle license and registration sales. The second component of the ELS system will be the Harvest Registration mobile application, and this will provide an easier way for hunters and anglers to register animal harvests and access digital documents. It's also going to enable more robust access to real-time data on animal harvests. And the final module of the system will be our event management module, and this will provide a one-stop shop to search and register for hunter safety classes and print registration documents online. Our next step in this phase of the project is to finalize review and publish the RFP. We believe that it's critical that the full spectrum of our stakeholder needs are considered as we implement a modern ELS. We'll continue to use the principles laid out in the modernization playbook to make sure that we're selecting a tool that best meets the needs of our stakeholders and that we're not escalating the needs of one stakeholder group over others or creating additional risk related to vendor protests of the outcome of the RFP and vendor selection process. Our RFP process shares the same goals of this bill, which is really to vet the needs of our stakeholders and make sure that we're meeting their needs. We are concerned that producing a report will take staff away from this important work and that it will cause delays in the project. We agree that there's a clear mandate from Minnesotans that they want a digital system to support their needs, and we welcome all vendors to respond to our proposal, including the vendor that produced MinDrive, and very much look forward to seeing the innovation that these partners can bring to the table for all Minnesotans. Thank you, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Covey. We have a question from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's something that I had talked to you about a little bit earlier today before we started. Ms. Covey, as you know, MnDrive through Fast Enterprises, the company that's provided that, believes that they can also handle registration of boats and trailers and that sort of stuff. And since I believe most of all those records tend to reside in deputy registers or some other controlling like that, are you pursuing that level of involvement from them in regards to just the vehicles, the boats, the canoes, trailers, et cetera?
Ms. Covey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg. So as I laid out, we are pursuing the full functionality for all three of the modules that we laid out. So yes, we are seeking the full spectrum of recreational vehicle title registration, as well as the hunt fish component, as well as the hunter safety component. So the RFP really focuses on the full suite of functionality that's needed to support the ELS requirements.
Follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So what it sounds like is you're saying, even though FAST can handle or our current system can handle one component, because it may not be able to handle all three, that's not something that you would consider. And I would just caution you that that's a big component of it. And if you're going to have driver's license, vehicle registration people and so forth dealing with part of it, that also creates a little bit of an issue when you have to go with two systems versus one in dealing with that. So just caution for you, and I would suggest that you work at some way of getting combined connections between the two. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. We will take a question from Representative Torkelson, and then we will move on to our next bill. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Covey, for being here. The issue that I was made aware of just recently is that apparently some states register outboard boat motors separately from the boats. Is that something you're aware of, and is it an important issue in your perspective?
Ms. Covey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I do not have that information. Be happy to get together with DNR staff that are more familiar with that subject and follow up with you offline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And thank you to all of our testifiers. We welcome, of course, additional written comments about this bill. As Mr. Zhang had pointed out in his testimony, there's a lot to this bill. I think some parts are probably a little bit more ready for action this session than others. And Representative Elkins will be working through these issues that have been raised today. And, I certainly would envision parts of this bill included in our omnibus bill. Of course, our motion is to lay it over, particularly the deputy registrar fee and some of the other items that we discussed today. So I will give you the last word, Representative Elkins, and then we'll move on to Representative Gomez's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you said, we're going to be laying this over so that we can make further tweaks. The Senate has laid it over as well, so expect this all to be worked out towards the end of the session. One comment about the fees. I mean, the recommended fee schedule, I think we should all recognize is that if we were going to fully raise the driver's license fees to handle the full cost of Real ID, for example, would probably be a significantly larger increase. And so essentially what we're doing with this shift from the DVS funds to the deputy registrars is a form of cost subsidy. So we're taking some of the profits from the simplest transactions and taking some of that money and giving it to the deputy registrars in order to buy down the necessary driver's license fee increases. So we should be, aware that's explicitly what we're doing.
Thank you for that, Representative Elkins. And I will renew the motion that House File 4164, and that we did have an amendment, so it's as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation bill. So thank you, Representative Elkins. Thank you to all of the testifiers. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 1355. I saw Chair Gomez here, and we welcome you back to the Transportation Committee. And I will move that House File 1355 be referred to the Public Safety Committee. And welcome again, Representative Gomez. And I know that there is an amendment as well. So why don't we take the A3 amendment first, and then we will proceed with conversation about the bill. So thank you, Representative Gomez. I believe Representative Cagle has the A3. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, Representative Cagle.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll move the A3 amendment does. What the A3 amendment does is appropriate $168,000 to for the two full-time employees at the department or with for in State Patrol to run the expungement program.
So, members, again, this is just a amendment to address the finances that our committee is responsible for, and we will focus our conversation in this committee on that, on our jurisdictional responsibilities. And so this is an amendment getting the bill into the shape the author would like us to consider it, and acknowledges our fiscal responsibilities. Here is there discussion to the A1 amendment? I don't see any, so we'll take a voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails. And now, Chair Gomez, to your bill. Welcome, a warm Transportation Committee welcome, and let us know about House File 1355.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Burris.
Sorry to interject. I just wanted to clarify, I believe it was the A3 amendment that the members were voting on.
Did I say A1? I'm sorry.
You did, sir.
Okay. Thank you for that, Mr. Burris. Let the record state that we voted on the A3 amendment. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Okay. With that, Chair Gomez, proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Good to see all the Transpo members this afternoon. Thanks for having me. So House File 1355 expands on cannabis decriminalization, which has been the law in Minnesota since the 1970s. For the purposes of the Transportation Committee, we're really going to be focusing on Section 11 of the bill, which starts on line 6.20. It's just goes on to the next page, basically. But I just want to kind of explain the bill broadly to you all and then focus a little bit on the license revocation issues. So just to begin with, so as I said, in the 1970s, we decriminalized cannabis, but only the bud or flower form of it. So up to 42.5 grams of bud or flower cannabis is considered a petty misdemeanor. So you basically just like get a ticket. There's not actually any criminal penalties associated with it. However, in our statutes, a cannabis mixture, so that's like anything that's a concentration of cannabis or a concentrated form of cannabis. So this includes like edibles, wax, vape cartridges, any kind of liquid is treated very differently. So any amount of a cannabis concentrate above 0.25 gram is considered a felony under our state law, regardless of how much THC, which is like the intoxicating substance in cannabis, it contains. So this bill reduces penalties for possession of a small personal amount of non-flower THC, tetrahydrocannabinol-containing product. So that's those edibles, wax, topical, et cetera, to a petty misdemeanor to make it equal with the way that we treat flower cannabis. It also does kind of a few things. As you'll see, it's kind of like a longer bill. It removes a drug education program requirement. It allows for the expungement of records for individuals with felony records if the charge would no longer be a felony after this bill becomes law. So it does that look back to really try to undo some of the harm of cannabis prohibition. It excludes possession of a small amount of marijuana from the definition of a crime of violence, which currently under our statute, a Schedule 1 substance or a crime related to a Schedule 1 substance, which cannabis is another problem with our code related to cannabis, but is considered a crime of violence. And so that has implications in other places in the criminal code. So it strikes that part. Reduces some penalties. It creates an affirmative defense in court for medical cannabis patients who weren't actively signed up for or registered in our cannabis program at the time of their arrest. And it provides automatic expungement for petty misdemeanor cannabis-related offenses after a one-year waiting period. And it also removes the requirement that a driver's license be revoked for those caught possessing or giving away a small amount of cannabis. So the final piece is that, basically in current law, for any cannabis offense, even a petty misdemeanor, which is a ticket, right? Driver's licenses can be revoked for up to 30 days. So our understanding is that this is actually invoked relatively infrequently. Like usually if you get a ticket for cannabis, even though they can take away your license, if you kind of deal with it, they don't take away your license, but it can happen and it has happened. And importantly, the other piece that this driver's revocation or the license revocation deals with is about how petty misdemeanor or like kind of low level cannabis crimes are treated by the federal criminal justice system. So there was a 2013 case, and I have a Mr. Gallagher is a lawyer who knows about this stuff. I'm sort of just going to share what I understand about it. And if anybody has questions, he can help. But so in order for a petty low level cannabis crime to not count as a drug offense for federal purposes, it can only have carry a penalty of up to a $300 fine. So the fact that we impose collateral consequences, license revocation, and sending people to a mandatory drug education kind of bumps it above that level of like of constituting a true petty misdemeanor under federal law. So this also clears that part up. And that's the bill. I think I talked a little bit more about the overall bill because I just wanted folks to understand, but you know, we want to keep our conversation kind of constrained to the license revocation parts if possible, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Gomez. And I know you have a couple of testifiers and I'm going to call on them and then members can ask the testifiers questions and then we'll have conversation about the bill after that. So the first person is Nick Morrow from LEAP. That's the Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Morrow. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Nick Morrow. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. just a quick little background. I'm a retired deputy sheriff from Los Angeles County. I'm a DRE, a DRE instructor, a NHTSA and DUI and field sobriety testing instructor. My expertise is to do with drugs, drug usage, and that type of thing. Testified in state and federal courts on numerous occasions regarding a variety of drugs, variety of situations. I've been involved in the medical and recreational marijuana legalization efforts in California. Have a little bit of background on some of that evolution. I hope can be to some use to this body. Yes, I'm here to help out in any way I can and ready to answer any questions that you might have.
Thanks so much, Mr. Morrow. Are there any questions of Mr. Morrow? I don't see any. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Our next testifier is someone that Chair Gomez referred to earlier, Tom Gallagher. He's a criminal defense attorney and a Minnesota Normal board member. Mr. Gallagher, welcome to the committee. It's good to see you again. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you for giving me a chance to testify to the committee today. Thank you to all the committee members. My name is Thomas Gallagher. I'm a lawyer in Minneapolis in the Uptown area. Live and work office out of Uptown Minneapolis in 61B. And I am a criminal defense attorney. I have several different interests, but one of the things I've done is I've taught continuing legal education courses on DUI marijuana to judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement officers, as well as defense attorneys. So I do have some expertise in that area. Also, I'm on the board of Minnesota Normal, and I'm affiliated with Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. And also, I'm a member of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. And I wanted to give a little bit of context for this bill and make sure you guys know that this bill is the product of a lot of work by a lot of people who've been really stretching to reach a compromise that a lot of people could agree on, even from different points of view. And several organizations have endorsed all or part of this bill. One of them is Americans for Prosperity, which is a national group with a Minnesota presence that most people would probably characterize as being conservative-leaning. Also, the Minnesota Republican Liberty Caucus, and their chairman testified at a committee hearing last week on this bill in favor of it. Sensible Change Minnesota, a group that's been working on especially medical marijuana issues in Minnesota. Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation, Minnesota Chapter of Students for Sensible Drug Policies, Minnesota Normal, the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus has endorsed the provisions that relate to gun rights in the bill, Law Enforcement Action Partnership, and we heard from another testifier today from that group, from LEAP, the Reason Foundation, which is probably a libertarian or maybe conservative-leaning group. R Street Institute, which I think of as a think tank. Minnesota Veterans for Cannabis and the Minnesota Catholic Conference, which I believe, if I remember correctly, they've opposed legalization, but they're supporting this bill. So I think it's important to note that this bill is the product of compromise. And so it isn't everything everybody would like, but it's something we can, maybe hopefully we can all agree on, or at least many of us can agree on. It does update the small amount petty misdemeanor to include the resinous form of marijuana. So if a suburban mom gets searched and they find two gummy bears with THC, she doesn't get a felony. I think a lot of people think that's crazy, and I would definitely be one of those people. If this bill passes, that would no longer happen. And another thing this bill would do is make a small amount of marijuana, as originally conceived in 1996 or written, the language is largely what it was back then. It hasn't changed much when I look back at the history of the statute. The problem has arisen in U.S. versus Foot. I believe it's a 2013 federal case. I've got a citation in, I think I attached one of the articles I wrote about that case in my written materials that are available to the committee. But the federal court held that the Minnesota petty misdemeanor conviction was actually a criminal conviction after all, because the penalty provision of the statute is more than just a $300 fine. If you look at the definition of a petty misdemeanor in 609.02, a petty misdemeanor is a violation of law that has a penalty of up to a $300 fine only. So if any jail time at all is required, or probationary conditions such as drug education programming, that would make it a criminal conviction, according to the federal court in the Foot case. So this bill would fix that, make it a true petty misdemeanor. So Mr. Foot wouldn't have gone to prison after all. Unfortunately, he did go to prison because of that Minnesota petty, so-called petty. And then the bill would also create a new expanded gross misdemeanor category. Right now, it's just first-time controlled substance more than a quarter gram is a gross misdemeanor, less than the felony threshold. This would expand it so that double the small amount threshold would become a gross misdemeanor. So double the 42.5 grams of flour, which is 85 grams, would be a gross misdemeanor up to that amount. Or 16 grams of non-flour mixture would be a gross misdemeanor. That concept is similar to something that was advanced in a Minnesota County Attorneys Association bill a couple years ago, if that looks familiar to some people. There would also be an affirmative defense for medical marijuana users who are charged with crimes, where they would be allowed to tell the jury the truth about their medical defense. That has been precluded under a Minnesota Court of Appeals case called State versus Hansen from 1991. This bill would fix that and allow people to at least have a fair shot of telling the truth of their situation to the jury. This would also prevent many people from losing their gun rights. For people in the gross misdemeanor category, that would not trigger the felony crime of violence lifetime ban, because it wouldn't be a felony anymore. On the driver's license provision, which I suppose is the thing most pertinent to this committee.
Yeah, Mr. Gallagher, if you could let us know your thoughts on the driver's license provision and then wrap up. We have questions also.
Okay, so just real quickly, if you look at the driver's license provisions, essentially what it does is it excludes the small amount of marijuana provision in 152.027, but it does not change the marijuana in a motor vehicle loss of driver's license. So since I'm short on time, I'll just leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks so much for that testimony, Mr. Gallagher. And so we have a question from Representative Petersburg, and is that to Mr. Gallagher, to the author, or just part of our...
To Mr. Gallagher, I'm looking for a legal opinion here. So.
Okay. You've got the right person. Mr. Gallagher will answer your question. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. I will have more questions when we get into the full bill, but on line 2.19 through 2.2 of the bill, and I'll read the whole thing because I'm confused, and so I thought maybe as a legal person you could kind of give us direction here. It says, drug paraphernalia means all equipment, products, and materials of any kind except those items used in conjunction with permitted uses of controlled substances, including but not limited to the permitted uses of marijuana. That included but not limited to the permitted use of marijuana was added, which, the way I read it, that drug paraphernalia means everything except those in conjunction with controlled substances, which is defined as including but not limited to the permitted uses of marijuana, which to me then would indicate, well, then it means it includes that, but it's not limited. So it could be actually any equipment at all. And so am I misreading that, or is that something that needs to be clarified?
Mr. Gallagher.
I think I'm going to have to admit that you've stumped me on that one, Representative.
It just seems like it's a kind of a double negative, which says it almost includes everything. So that's why it kind of raised a red flag for me. So
I didn't notice that earlier. I'm not prepared on that, but I would just off the cuff notice that we could distinguish marijuana from medical cannabis possibly. I don't know if that's what they're driving at there. Maybe the author knows better than I about that. I'm not sure.
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think Mr. Gallagher hit on it. I think the intent here was to clarify that, you know, under our under Minnesota statute, patients have access to medical cannabis. And so when a patient has, you know, what's considered a piece of paraphernalia, like a pipe or something like this, which is used to consume the medication, that that's to be allowed. But just to be honest, like, I'm not sure why it says including but not limited to the permitted uses. Like, I don't know what the extension beyond that is. And also happy to dispense legal advice anytime, Rep. Petersburg.
Mr.
Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Yeah, I knew what the intent was. It's just that it doesn't seem like legally that's what it says. And so I was just pointing that out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Okay, members.
Mr. Chair, sorry if I could.
Yes, Chair Gomez.
I just wanted to note for Rep. Petersburg that we're going back to public safety. So I think the intent is to put this in the omnibus bill. This part of the bill is really under the kind of the purview of the public safety committee. And nobody had brought this to my attention before. So I will, I'll just kind of look into it more. And if we need an amendment that kind of like tailors it a little more narrowly, then we'll take care of that in public safety.
Thank you for that, Representative Gomez. That's very helpful. Okay, members, let's get to some general discussion of the bill. I don't have any additional questions for testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. I don't see hands up, although Representative Petersburg, it sounded like you had some thoughts in general about the bill. If you wanted to share those now, it would be totally fine.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think that would be helpful. So we're on to the final bill now, correct?
Correct. We're on to discussion of the bill, questions of the author, et cetera.
And the motion will be to send it back to public safety, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So the question is, and I think we have somebody from BCA or others. My question is with this change, how is that going to be actually implemented? Is it something that we can determine? How do we determine the THC and some of these materials? I guess that's really the crux of the whole thing is what level of THC are we allowing and what we aren't allowing. And so I'm not sure if anybody is there that can answer that question.
Why don't we have Chair Gomez answer first, and then I know that Mr. Evans is on the call from the BCA, and I'll have him respond as well. Okay. Chair Gomez.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So we didn't go with THC content as the sort of limit for this bill. And the reason for that is because that would, of course, like necessitate laboratory testing, which adds a really big expense to the bill and doesn't align with the way that we treat flower cannabis. So the limit, the way that we treat controlled substances generally, we don't ask like, oh, if your cocaine is stronger than XYZ, you get a greater penalty. So we don't deal with the active component of drugs. We deal with the weight. And so what we did was we took the limit under which it's cannabis possession is considered a petty misdemeanor for flower or bud, which is 42.5 grams, about an ounce and a half. And we kind of worked backwards from that using the amount of active ingredient of THC in 42.5 grams of flower cannabis at 20% concentration, and we figured out what that amount would be of an extract, like a pretty pure extract, like you would consume via a vape pen, like a lot of our medical cannabis patients, for example, use. And so the reason that we came up with 8 grams, there was like some rhyme or reason to it. We figured out that that's kind of roughly, the equivalent of 42.5 grams of flower cannabis.
Representative Petersburg, thank you for that, Chair Gomez. Representative Petersburg, did you want anyone from DPS to weigh in? I thought that Mr. Evans was on the call. I don't believe he is, but we do have others.
I think that would be helpful because, I understand the premise behind that, but when we start getting into medical cannabis that could be in gummies or a lot of different things, all of a sudden that kind of gets a little bit goofy. And so I'm trying to figure out how a law enforcement officer that might be stopping somebody, the Highway Patrol, would know whether or not what level they're dealing with. And so I'm just curious as to how that's going to work.
Well, we have Mr. Hansen. We have Colonel Langer.
Colonel Langer could answer that question.
Colonel Langer, are you available here?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay, welcome to the committee, Colonel Langer. Thank you very much. Please state your name for the record and proceed to answer Representative Petersburg's question.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Petersburg. I do believe that Superintendent Drew Evans from the BCA is better positioned to answer this question, and he's available and ready to do so.
Oh, okay. I didn't see him. Mr. Evans, welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Drew Evans. I'm the superintendent of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and chair, members, and Representative Petersburg. I'll take a stab at answering it. There are a few different concepts going on in the discussion, but when it comes to us and the way that we read the bill right now, when we have items come into the laboratory, as Representative Gomez noted, that this does not require a concentration amount. Right now, under the current law, we simply determine whether or not THC is present, and it's either present in leafy material, which puts it in the marijuana definition, or THC is present in non-plant material, and then it falls into the other categories. How we would test in this particular instance, and the fiscal note that was prepared for this, is we examined the cases that came into the BCA over the last year, and we made a determination based on them, and it's often multiple items, and then we weigh up to the threshold amount of the highest level charge. This is true for all drug work. This isn't specific to marijuana or cannabis-related cases. And so in that instance, we would weigh the amount and find THC present under this bill to the amount that meets the weight threshold, and that's going to either be under the amount, and it would be a small amount under this new bill, or it would be over that, then we'd go into those other possession limits, and that's how we would make that determination. Right now, as you say, we wouldn't do that. We do quantify THC currently within our laboratory for waxes and liquid materials. This is a little bit of a challenging area. We do not do it on edibles. It's not something that we're able to quantify, but that, as Representative Goldman's noted, it would not be required under this bill.
One quick follow-up, if you have one, Representative Petersburg.
Okay, I would like to have a final comment, too, at the end, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But the question that I guess I have, then, is it sounds like, then, we don't really know what level of offense it is until after it gets back from testing, which, to me, seems like that would be problematic when we don't even know what you're going to be fining somebody for. But is that correct?
Chair Gomez.
That's not correct, because there is no concentration limit in statute. There's not for heroin, there's not for cocaine, there's not for any substance. It refers only, as you have just heard Colonel Langer talk about, the testing that they do is about the presence or the absence of the psychoactive component of cannabis, which is THC. So you don't have to know the level. You don't have to know the level in order for us to evaluate whether it's a crime or not, or what the penalty is, or whether it's a felony or misdemeanor, because it doesn't refer to concentration or levels of any substance. It refers to gross weight. And so it's really just about what this is doing is saying the way that we treat flower cannabis, which is by evaluating the weight and the presence or absence of THC after the fact, right, is the same way that we're going to deal with concentrates. And so in order to establish that upper limit, we did use the concentration of THC to make sure that it was roughly equivalent, that the mixtures and the flower material were treated roughly equivalent in terms of the amount of THC. But that was just for the purposes of calculating what the gross weight limit should be of cannabis concentrates for the purposes of this bill. It wasn't because we're asking or we're trying to get into a situation with any substance where we're creating like complicated formulas for ourselves to figure out how much of the active ingredient is in that small amount of drugs that you found of any kind. Instead, we're aligning this with the way that controlled substances are treated throughout our statutes, which is about weight, not concentration or level of psychoactive component that's within the weight of drugs that were seized. I hope that makes sense.
Okay, thank you, Chair Gomez. What I'd like to do is take a question or comment from Representative West, and then we'll circle back to Representative Petersburg for his closing thoughts, and then we'll take a vote. So, Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the subject we're talking about in terms of THC concentrations, Representative Gomez is correct. This bill treats it like any other illegal substance. And what's important to differentiate THC from the other ones is, one, it's not lethal. You can eat a whole bag of gummies and the THC will not kill you. So that's really important when we're thinking about public safety aspects, is this is not a lethal drug. And two, if you're driving on the road and you're impaired, the cop is pulling you over because you're making a moving violation of some sort. You're swerving, you're going in out of lanes, you're driving the wrong way in traffic. That's what the police officer is looking for. And when they pull you over, well, they can ding you on those things. And then they also can get the opportunity to investigate whether you're impaired or not. And if they have probable cause, well, the police officers are trained to get to the bottom of this. They're trained to use verbal judo to really get at what's causing these issues. So this bill makes our laws make a whole lot more sense, because right now we have cannabis scheduled at number one, no reasonable medical use and a likely potential for abuse. But then we also have a medical cannabis program. So this is, I mean, I wish this bill did more, but we need this to pass, and this needs to pass right away so people don't get inappropriately punished for something that's not dangerous. But let's just make our laws make a little more sense, because they are completely schizophrenic. They're written by like two people from two different countries and two different languages and then put in the same statute books. So thank you, Representative Gomez, for bringing this forward, and I'm excited to see it move forward. The one last thing I would add is I would love to see this go as a standalone in addition to going the omnibus bill, because as we all know, omnibus bills can easily get derailed for things that have nothing to do with the good provisions that are in them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Weston. Just so you know, it's not going in the transportation omnibus, but, you know, it's going back to public safety, and the chair of public safety and Chair Gomez, I'm sure, will figure out a good path for this. Representative Petersburg, I know you wanted to make some, I don't see any other member questions or comments, so I want to circle back to you, Representative Petersburg. I know you wanted to make one last comment before we vote.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. And I certainly appreciate Representative West's concerns and questions, and I do think there is need for some improvements. I'm just not sure this is the bill, and I will probably be voting no against it. But I would like to just kind of read from the Colorado Department of Transportation when it says, drivers continue to get behind the wheel after consuming cannabis, with many heavy users saying they do so on a regular basis. That should make us uncomfortable given the fact that cannabis impairs the critical abilities needed to drive safely. And a lot of the reports come back saying that they're finding when they're doing the testing, cannabis is also mixed with alcohol or some other drugs, and cannabis tends to make those impairments even more so prevalent. And so my concern is that we're dealing with an increase now in traffic fatalities here in the state of Minnesota. And I'm concerned that this may allow for some more impeded use of cannabis and others. And so I have very big concerns for that, especially when we're not, I'm not real sure, clear from the testimony, that the a way to test it is thoroughly vetted, et cetera. So that's my two cents worth at this point. And I thank you for the chair for working on this, and for Chair Gomez to working on it as well. I think we just need a little bit more work. So I will be a no today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I'm gonna make a quick comment, and then we'll give Chair Gomez the last word here before we vote. But first of all, Chair Gomez, thank you for bringing this. This is one of the most diverse coalitions I've ever seen in my time at the coalition supporting your bill in my time at the legislature. So thanks to you for that. And I think this is a really important bill. I'll be supporting it, and I would encourage members to support it as well. Chair Gomez, last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the consideration, members. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you see a Gomez Americans for Prosperity bill, maybe you have a great or a terrible idea on your hands. I'm not sure which one. But my thanks to, you know, this bill has bipartisan authorship in this body. Thanks, Representative West is one of those co-authors. Senator Abler is carrying it in the Senate. So, you know, this is the result of a lot of work to kind of get some broader consensus on this issue, to just sort of clean up and align our statutes on the different kind of delivery forms of cannabis, which is, as Representative West said, you know, a non-fatal substance, and really, you know, unfortunately a driver of a lot of, you know, cannabis prohibition is a driver of a lot of disproportionate enforcement activities in the sort of criminal justice field. It creates a pretext for, you know, a lot of stops that would otherwise be unconstitutional. And, you know, so there's a lot of things to think about in terms of the way that this has impacted, the way that cannabis prohibition has impacted people's lives. And so this is just a little part of cleaning it up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. With that, members, Mr. Morrow, your hand is up. I don't know if there was something you wanted to add. Did you want to quickly say anything here?
I just wanted to interject the difference between flower marijuana and concentrated marijuana. They're easy for the officer in the field to differentiate. So that's easy as far as charging or investigating that type in that realm. The DUI provisions or the assertion that we're playing this game with marijuana being applied alcohol rules. Marijuana will stay in your system days longer than the impairment does. So there's issues involved when somebody is stopped, how they're stopped, if they make an admission. You know, with blood alcohol concentration, that's real-time information. So if you have a blood alcohol concentration from very, very low to very high, your impairment is visible at that particular time. With marijuana, if somebody uses marijuana on a Friday, they'll test positive for it on Monday. So a lot of the regulatory provisions, if not pursued correctly, will fall under bad science, basically. I deal with that as an expert witness. I'm a DUI marijuana expert as well. So those are some provisions that I hope that this body will take forward and get the right people to make the right considerations. A lot of the Colorado issues, a lot of the California issues, we've both made all the mistakes that can be made, and we've done our best to correct them as far as possession of edibles, possession of flour, that type of thing. So
thank you, Mr. Morrow. We're going to get to a vote here, but I appreciate your comments. And, you know, if you have some additional written comments, please submit them to the committee.
And if there's any questions, please seek me out. Thank you.
Okay. We have Mr. Morrow's contact information as well. Okay, members. I'm going to ask Mr. Dodge to call the roll. Did you want to say anything more, Representative Gomez? Sorry about that. Okay. All right, Mr. Dodge, we will take the roll. The motion is that House File 1355, as amended, be referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, nay. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman.
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, pass. Murphy, no. Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson.
Olson, no.
Olson, nay. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, no.
Torkelson, nay. Representative West.
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 13 ayes and 3 nays.
Okay, there being 13 ayes and 3 nays, the bill is re-referred as House File 1355 as amended is referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Chair Gomez. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 3312, and this is coming to us from Representative Eklund. And I will move that House File 3312 is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation finance and policy bill. And we do have a so Representative Eklund, welcome. Amendment, the A1 amendment. This is really an A1 amendment, members. And if you want to explain the amendment, and then we'll take a vote on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment does a few things. The original bill had the log width, load width of 10 feet. It reduces that down to 9.5. It clarifies that a stretch of I-35 between Carlton and Duluth would not be eligible for widths over the standard 102 inches, which is 8.5 feet. It clarifies that these permitted loads would need to be flagged. It clarifies that these permitted loads would not be allowed in the Twin Cities metro area. And it clarifies that permit law must comply with federal regulations regarding the national network. And that is the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? I don't see any. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails. Okay. We are now on to the bill. Representative Eklund, tell us about House File 3312.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Transportation Committee. House File 3312 is a bill that will adjust the width of raw forest products, or logs in layman's terms, that can be hauled to processing sites. This adjustment is because of the consumer demands for building changes in consumer demands for building projects. The standard 8-foot 2x4 is no longer what consumers want for all applications. We are asking today to change the width of the load from 8 foot 6 inches wide that it is now to 9.6 feet wide. Today I have three testifiers to speak to the specifics of the bill and the need for this change. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you very much. And so let's get right into the testimony, and we can have questions of the author after that. We do have, let's see, I think our first person would be Rick Horton. Mr. Horton, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thanks for having me today. My name is Rick Horton. I'm the Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries, trade organization representing the primary wood consuming mills in the state. The current width of 102 inches satisfies the needs of most of our member companies. However, two of our member companies are asking for the ability to haul a longer width. As Representative Eklund said, the standard ceiling height in new homes is now 9 feet. And so Potlatch Deltic in Bemidji makes 2x4 lumber for home construction. And for a portion of their product, they need to make 9-foot 2x4s, which requires raw materials at 9.5 feet in length. Another of our members is Savannah Pallets, one of the largest pallet manufacturing companies in the state. And when they make certain pallets, they need 4.5 foot raw material to make those pallets to that width. So the 9.5 foot width allows them to get two pieces out of a log rather than having a large amount of waste. And in their case in particular, it's important to have trailers that can offload themselves in their wood yard. They don't have the large equipment to just simply offload the wood. The truck driver has to drive out into the wood yard and get up on the trailer and offload the wood. So that's my case for the need, and I'll stand ready for questions after other testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Horton. Our next testifier is Ray Higgins from the Timber Producers Association. Mr. Higgins, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Ray Higgins of the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. We're a trade association representing loggers, truckers, smaller sawmills, and allied businesses in our state. We do support House File 3312. Basically, wood in Minnesota is hauled in two different ways. One is lengthwise or parallel to the road on crib trailers, but wood is also hauled crosswise, perpendicular to the road on rail trailers, and both have various safety advantages and disadvantages. Rail trailers have a couple of economic advantages. The trailers are lighter, so you get more wood on them, and therefore also fewer truck trips on the roads, less use of diesel and fossil fuels. And rail trailers are also cheaper to purchase. So some haulers choose to use rail trailers to haul these 8.5 or, in this case, as we're talking about, 9-foot sticks. that a small number of mills in our state wish to purchase that don't fit within existing law, which has that 8.5-foot limit or 102 inches. Now, farmers in Minnesota can purchase a permit right now, allowing them to legally haul hay at up to 12 feet in width. We just want to do the same thing, purchase a permit in order to do this legally, but of course we don't want as much as the hay haulers have. We only want an extra foot, 9.5 feet, as opposed to 8.5. Now, there are, Rick Horton mentioned two mills. There is a third that's not a member of his organization, but a member of ours. Jake Sawmill and Badette would like to do this. I believe Mr. Hasbergen will talk to you in a moment, and also the Potlatch Deltic Mill in Bemidji and Savannah Pallets in McGregor, as Mr. Horton mentioned. Now, based on the timber hauled to these three companies as compared to the wood hauled all across the state to all different consumers, we're talking about less than 4% of the timber would be purchased at this increased width, and some of that would still be hauled in crib trailers that haul lengthwise. I'd like to tell you we've discussed this provision, this bill, with MnDOT, with the State Patrol, and the Association of Minnesota Counties, as well as the Minnesota Townships Association. I believe Mr. Krieger wishes to address you in a moment. Both the townships organization and the counties organizations have told me that they would remain neutral so far on this. And part of it is, I think the townships in particular, Mr. Krieger will tell you, and he can speak for himself, but he's worried about additional weight. And additional weight is mentioned in this bill, but only because this extra width provision would piggyback on an existing permit we already have, which provides extra weight. This provision we're talking about today would not increase weights at all over and above what we already have in state statute. MnDOT has also expressed a concern about extra width because they occasionally build roads with lane widths that are a little narrower. 12 feet is that standard, but there are very few places in the state that have narrower lanes, and typically that's where they're trying to calm traffic, and our drivers are very good at avoiding those places or honoring those calming mechanisms that are in place around the state. There is also a load securement issue, which has been raised by the State Patrol in our conversations with them. We're addressing that with content in our association's magazine to our members, as well as through training at the Minnesota Logger Education Programs conferences next month. So we've had various conversations with a lot of different stakeholders to try to find a solution that works for all Minnesotans. House File 3312 would help our loggers and truckers economically, help keep them legal, and reduce liability when hauling. So thank you for bringing this forward to Representative Eklund, and I'll be available for questions when testimony concludes.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you very much, Mr. Higgins. And as you mentioned, we do have Jake Hasbergen from the Jake Sawmill in Baudette. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. I am Jake Hasbergen, owner and operator of Jake Sawmill in Baudette. I employ 13 people in Lake of the Woods County. We purchased timber from loggers and saw that timber into lumber for pallet makers. We ship our products throughout Minnesota and surrounding states. We support House File 3312 due to some simple math. My customers want to purchase 3-foot pieces of lumber for their pallets. When lumber is hauled to my mill at 8.5 feet, no matter what I do, we can only get 3-footers, 2 3-footers from that stick. The remaining 2.5 feet of timber is wasted. When we purchase 9-foot sticks from the loggers, we can get 3-footers from those three footers from those sticks, greatly reducing waste and greatly increasing our utilization and efficiency. Many loggers bring us wood on crib trailers that haul the wood lengthwise. However, many other loggers can't afford these more expensive crib trailers and wish to bring us wood on rail trailers, which hauls the wood crosswise. House File 3312 would open up a market for many of these loggers, allowing them to bring the wood we need to our mill. I urge you to support HF 3312, allowing us to purchase the wood we need for our business and also to help loggers expand their markets and operate legally. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Mr. Hasbergen. Next, we have Laura Rhodes from MnDOT. Ms. Rhodes, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Laura Rhodes, an attorney in MnDOT's Office of Chief Counsel, representing the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations. Thank you for your time today and the opportunity to testify on House File 3312. Representative Eklund and the other testifiers did a good job of explaining the bill and intent behind it. MnDOT has appreciated being part of the ongoing conversations. There have been several meetings with the author, stakeholders, MnDOT district staff, as well as our partners at the Minnesota State Patrol. We've had the chance to offer our input, concerns about safety, and technical drafting assistance. To add a couple additional details to the comments that have already been made. So as Representative Eklund and Mr. Higgins have said, Subdivision 1A of the bill is essentially the same language that already exists in current law for the forest products permit, and that has been in place since 2004. And the language on lines 1.4 to 1.6 of the amendment is also language that exists in current law and addresses the ability for certain logging vehicles to operate on a very specific segment of I-35 as identified in and passed by the FAST Act. And so Subdivision 1B creates this new permit for both, you know, for vehicles to be over width and over the legal weight limit. And we do appreciate the compromise of going from 10 feet down to 9.5 feet. And, you know, I think this does help address some of the concerns raised by engineers about these vehicles operating in areas of the state that are designing roads with narrower lane widths. The language on lines 1.9 to 1.14 of the amendment adds some additional requirements and conditions that we believe are necessary to help address roadway safety. And there is, in the amendment, there is new language that kind of addresses the national network and parts about the interstate. And often with anything truck size and weight related, there's sort of a complicated confluence between state law and federal regulations and determining kind of which applies, you know, when on what system and under various circumstances. Based on some recent input or guidance we've received from the Federal Highway Administration, there are some additional changes that we will need to make. And I've spoken with Mr. Burris about it, and we will, I'm happy to help with that and any additional drafting assistance. And finally, in Subdivision 2, the language on lines 2.1 to 2.2 of the amendment clarifies permitting authority. And so this new language is consistent with other existing laws, with MnDOT practice, and the preference expressed by the Minnesota County Engineers Association and other local entities. So I think it's important to note that it gives the authority, you know, to MnDOT and local road authorities to issue a permit, but it isn't, you know, it doesn't require them to do so. And lastly, the language on lines 2.4 to 2.5 of the amendment is to address the overwidth vehicles operating with the new permit and make it clear that they must follow all road and bridge postings, including those pertaining to lane or roadway width. So we do appreciate, as I said, the opportunity to be part of the conversation and offer some of these changes to the author to help address, you know, concerns. And happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rhodes. And our last testifier is Mr. Jeff Krieger, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Townships. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Krieger, and proceed. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Krieger. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Townships. I want to thank Representative Eklund as well as Mr. Ray Higgins of the Minnesota Timber Producers Association for making townships aware of this bill. I'm here to speak on House File 3312. Matt has a few concerns I'd like to lift up. On its face, the bill is good. As the committee probably knows, townships are mostly concerned with truck weights. In this bill, we see that the max load capacity will not be increased. However, the longer boards mean that in order to stay under the max load capacity of 90,000 pounds, haulers will not be able to load their trailers full and stay compliant. From what we have learned from history, a subset of individuals will try and maximize their truck carrying capacity by filling their trailers full, regardless of the weight restriction. This extra load will damage our township roads since our roads are not built to a 10-ton standard. This is one of the reasons why MAC keeps asking the legislature for ongoing and dedicated funding for township roads. Every year there seems to be weight exemptions granted by the legislature, but very little monies and reparations for the damage they cause. I recognize this bill does not give a weight exemption, but I think we can agree on how trucks can easily be loaded to exceed the current weight capacities listed in the bill. This is in part also an enforcement issue. I learned recently that Minnesota has only 33 weight enforcement officers in the entire state. Without enforcement, we'll continue to see an increase in load weights, which will lead to more road damage, regardless of legislative approval. For these reasons, House File 3312 gives us pause due to the potential for abuse because of the lack of enforcement, as well as the lack of transportation funding. We hope the committee takes these concerns into consideration when discussing this bill. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Krieger. Members, is there a discussion to the bill? I see Mr. Higgins, if you have one quick thought you want to share with us, but we do need to move on. I see your hand up.
Give me 30 seconds. Mr. Krieger and he and I did speak, I think, three times today, talks about the truck being loaded full. These rail trailers don't have sides, so they could go even higher. I mean, theoretically, they could go 30 feet in the air if they were secured. So when he talks about full, I mean, they're never full. There's always room to go higher, but they do comply with weight. You know, they do load to the height at which they're in compliance with weight loss. I do understand his concern on weights on the township roads.
Thank you for that clarification. So members, if you have any questions of the author or of any of the testifiers, now we will go to discussion of the bill. I don't see any. I will just say, Chairman Eklund, thank you for your just extensive work with all of the people who have an interest in this bill. I really appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And I know that some of the concerns that have been raised, you've committed to me that you'll work through those. Again, we're laying this bill over. So any outstanding issues or concerns can be addressed. And I have a lot of confidence. Chair Eklund has always been so open about working through these issues with people. I know that we'll come to some consensus, although it feels like we're pretty close to that already, but just a few things need to be worked out. And Mr. Krieger, your point is very well taken about funding. It's something I've brought up many times that we grant exemptions, but then we don't keep up with the need for road maintenance and repair. So points well taken on all sides. And Chairman Eklund, did you want to leave us with any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first off, I want to thank all my testifiers, especially Dick Hasbargen. Rick Horton and Ray Higgins are around here all the time, but Mr. Hasbargen has done a terrific job. And so the members know Jake lives in my district. His business is in Representative Russell's district. So that's what it means, what these businesses mean in northeastern Minnesota. And we need entrepreneurs like Mr. Hasbargen to help diversify our economy and keep northeastern Minnesota running. So I'll let you know, Mr. Chair, that I will work with Ms. Rhodes and Mr. Langer and the rest to make sure that we have this bill in the proper shape when it's finally part of your transportation bill, unless you want to cut it loose and send it to the board, Mr. Chair, I'd be fine with that as well. But I appreciate the committee's support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Chair Eklund, we will honor whatever wishes you have for moving this bill along. So thank you very much, members and all testifiers. House File 3312, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. We have one final bill on the agenda, members, and that is House File 3787. This is from Representative and Vice Chair Cagle. Driver's license changes in voter safety education programs. So the motion is that we will refer House File 3787 to the Ways and Means Committee. Vice Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 3787 is our voter education program. So it would establish a voter education program in Minnesota, much like our snowmobile classes. So if you have the, what we're talking about is getting a certification to operate a motorized boat, and then the provisions that are in, under the jurisdiction of this committee is with the driver's license, making sure that we can get that little stamp on the back like we do for snowmobiles. So we have over 825,000 registered watercraft in the state of Minnesota. And so the point of this bill is really just to make sure that there's some sort of basic education when it comes to boater safety out on our lakes, that we're also making sure that we are keeping our lakes and rivers pristine, that we are checking our, you know, pulling the plugs and clean airing our boats when we pull them out of the water. And so this, Minnesota is just really one of the handful of states that doesn't have, doesn't require boater education. And so with that, I'll leave it to my testifiers.
But yeah, Vice Chair Cagle, sorry, I forgot to ask you to move a couple of amendments. You have a couple of amendments to get the bill in the shape you'd like us to consider. So why don't we take the A2 first, if you want to just very quickly let us know what's in the A2.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A2 amendment, and that one would it's the appropriations for the bill. So it would add $83,000 in fiscal year 2023 in order to fund the program.
Is there discussion? Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. Is there discussion to the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And we have an A3, I believe, Vice Chair Cagle.
Yep. So the A3 amendment is an amendment that the stakeholders worked on together with, I believe, the resort operators, and just talks about the fact that the exam that they can issue on site there can be either administered electronically or by paper for folks renting boats out to people.
Thank you for that, Vice Chair Cagle. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? By a vote of 1-0, the amendment prevails. okay, we have two testifiers. First up, we have Ms. Jill Sims, National Marine Manufacturers Association. Ms. Sims, welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Jill Sims with the National Marine Manufacturers Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to encourage you to support HF 3787. I represent the boat, engine, and marine accessory manufacturers. We all know that Minnesotans love boating, as Minnesota continually leads the way by ranking number 2 for boat registrations across the country with over 825,000 boats. Throughout the last 2 years, we've seen rapid growth, adding over 16,000 new motorized boat registrations in Minnesota. However, where we're falling behind is in boater education and safety training. To use recreational products in Minnesota like ATVs or snowmobiles, an individual is required to go through safety training except when operating boats. Nearly 40 states have these boater education requirements that extend beyond youth to help keep all users safe on the water. That's why this year we have a strong coalition of stakeholders from the Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates to MnCOLA to law enforcement, resorts, and marine businesses. We've all come together to ask the legislature to expand the boater safety education program. Expanding this program beyond the current youth requirement is an opportunity to directly impact boaters on the water by educating them about best safety practices, ways to reduce conflict, and help ensure that they are the best steward of the resource. Our ultimate goal is to improve the experience on the water for boaters and make the lakes more enjoyable for all. Thank you to Representative Cagle for bringing this bill forward, and committee members, we encourage you to support HF 3787, and thank you for the consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. We will take any questions after we hear from our next testifier. I'm very excited that we have Jeff Forrester from the Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates, an avid outdoors person, a writer, and someone who knows this issue very well. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Forrester. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jeff Forrester. I'm executive director of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. And thank you to the committee and chair and members of the committee. MLR is an association of over 250 lake associations and county coalitions of lake associations, resorts, anglers, marina owners, and others who are working to protect Minnesota's lake and river heritage. This means protecting water quality and protecting and advancing the recreational experiences of the local recreation-based economies in Minnesota. I'd like to thank Representative Cagle for bringing House File 3787 forward. HF 3787 is critically important to protecting public safety, preventing conflicts among different user groups, and protecting lake ecology. Much work has been done to bring together a broad coalition of groups to work on this issue. I'd like to thank engaged legislators and key partners, Jill Sims from the National Marine Manufacturers Association, Matt Grund, Marine Retailers of the Americas, Gabriel Jabor, Tonka Bay Marina, and Joe Snyder from Minnesota COLA. Basic boating safety training has been well developed by the National Association of Boating Law Administrators, but other issues like aquatic invasive species prevention, reducing user conflicts, and lake ecology will be added to the NABLA training with the support of Minnesota's lake-related stakeholders and experts. And the best available data from the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center and the St. Anthony Falls Lab at University of Minnesota. With this support, the Minnesota DNR and partners will be able to build an educational track that will protect public safety, decrease the risk of aquatic invasive species spread, lower user conflicts, and protect shorelines, lake sediments, and lake ecology so that the critical resource services of our lakes can be maintained even as boating recreation expands into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Forrester. So, members, are there any questions of either Ms. Sims or Mr. Forrester? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'll just do two quick questions, I think, maybe to the author too, but does this include ski jets? And the second question is, do we have any resort owners that are concerned about the ability to rent boats and stuff from their properties? Just those two questions, Mr. Chair.
The author or either testifier want to answer that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know that
Vice Chair Cagle.
I'm sorry, we also, I believe that Joel Carlson, who has been representing the resort owners, is on the call if he'd want to offer any testimony to that question, the second question.
We're starting to get a little short on time, so if members could and testifiers could keep their questions and answers brief, I'd appreciate it. Vice Chair Cagle, did you want to answer Representative Petersburg's question? I know it looked like Ms. Sims was potentially available for that too.
She would like to answer that. I think I'm not 100% sure about the jet boats, so I guess I would have defer to Ms. Sims.
Ms. Sims.
Yes, it would be for all motorized watercraft, so personal watercraft, any boat with a motor would be included.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you. And then the other question was whether or not the resort owners have any concerns about this with losing potential for rental boats. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, maybe that would be a question for Mr. Carlson briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We appreciate the amendment that Representative Cagle added to the bill that requires a task force be put together for implementation of the testing and of the training program that we will be a part of. We don't fear change. We embrace it. We know that this is needed, but we want to make sure that it's done correctly. So that amendment gives us great comfort that we're going to be able to work with this program as it is developed. And I would remind members, this doesn't take effect until July 1st of 2024, so we have adequate time. And if there's a problem, I'll make sure that you're the first one I come and talk to, Representative P's work.
Thank you.
Well, that's a pretty good commitment there. Thank you. Okay, I do not see any further questions. Vice Chair Cagle, a quick summary, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, you know, it seems like every summer we see those news stories about people who have had tragic accidents out on the lake. And, you know, it's been many years since I took my snowmobile safety test, but I still remember a lot of the things that that I learned in that program. And now I think the number one thing that's going to apply to me for that is I'm going to have to be the second to the last sled, because, you know, this is the only finger I can hold up. But I think this is really a needed program here in Minnesota. And so I'd appreciate all your support. So thanks.
Thank you for your work on this bill, Vice Chair Cagle, and thank you to all the testifiers. Members, I'm renewing my motion that House File 3787 as amended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Ernstein?
Aye.
Ernstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Barr, no.
Barr, nay. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins? Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, no.
Heinrich, nay. Representative Kosnick? Representative Kosnick? Representative Mason?
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Olson, aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 14 ayes and 2 nays.
All right, there being 14 ayes and 2 nays, House File 3787 is amended, is on its way to the Ways and Means Committee. So thank you, members, for a productive day here today, and then we will see you again on Thursday at 1 o'clock. With that, this meeting is adjourned.